Welcome to the Forest Creek Podcast. We're back.
It's a Halloween episode.
Yeah, it is, isn't well, it?
I mean, it's October, so I thought it would be appropriate to do this topic, and then this episode I'm planning, at least, to release it for Halloween.
Of course.
I'm Raph, your regular host, and today with me is, returning to the podcast, is Jake.
Hi.
You haven't been on since the D&D episode.
Yeah, I think it's when we did the review.
Yeah, which was quite some time ago, but...
Yeah, almost two years ago. Yeah.
I've been doing this show for a while. Wow. Today's episode, we are going into the lesser-known annals of the bestiaries. I don't know how to phrase this exactly. We're digging into the paranormal. We're looking into cryptids.
Yeah, we're digging into the stuff that has inspired a lot of film, books, and where kind of those creatures come from. And where they take that inspiration from old stories and
folklore
and myths.
Yeah,
yeah.
So this is a good place to start. Is what exactly is a cryptid?
So I actually had to make sure I had the correct definition for this. A cryptid is a creature that people believe is real. Or they may have believed that they have encountered or seen without substantial evidence to support it. So it creates the legend of something.
Yeah.
From an encounter that someone has stated they've encountered this creature.
And that's whether or not this encounter was real.
Exactly.
Right. So Bigfoot is, I think, a pretty central kind of easy to...
Bigfoot is
cryptid.
Bigfoot is definitely one of the more well-known cryptids out there.
Yeah, and it's it's not as though there has never been a Bigfoot, as some paleontologists like to point towards the existence of Gigantopithecus. I think it was called.
It is, yeah. Gigantopithecus,
and that pretty much falls into the description of what we believe a Bigfoot would have looked like.
Yeah,
whether or not there is currently one walking around the forestry. Around the Rocky Mountains or around Canada where we believe he is, or in Oregon, I think that's what a lot of people like to say.
It's funny. Bigfoot started off as a indigenous culture, kind of myth and rumor. And there's a lot of them that lay claim to being the first ones to have, kind of put it forward. The Stolo community, for example, one of the tribes there, they say that no, that's theirs. Is it actually? Who knows?
Yeah, this is another point of interest: is are cryptids exclusive to any part of the planet?
No, cryptids are worldwide. It's because each culture has a cryptid of some sort. Mm-hmm. Pretty much every single culture out there has a belief around. A type of creature that's, stalking the woods or does these mysterious
things. Do
ghosts
fall underneath this category?
Technically, yes.
Because they are what we would also call paranormal.
Yes. Paranormal and cryptids, they're not synonymous. They can have quite a bit of overlap. Ghosts would fall in that category still. Mainly because people believe that they see them all the time. There's so many haunted houses in North America alone that lay claim to that. We have a spirit that's or a ghost or a poltergeist, just another form of a spirit that haunts the grounds. And that's what's that belief still falls in the lines of what a cryptid is described as.
Are all cryptids paranormal? But not all paranormal things are cryptids.
That's a hard one.
Because here's a curveball that I want to throw into this.
Yes.
Are aliens cryptids?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay.
They are considered cryptids.
So they're considered cryptids.
And it's, again, goes back to the definition. It specifically defines a creature that someone has, that people believe they may have encountered or that does exist without substantiating evidence.
So when we say creature, though, we often think of something being biological.
Living, yes.
Having a physical substance, whereas ghosts don't typically fall into that category.
No, but there's some really specific cryptids that actually have that overlap where it's both a creature in story but also a spirit in story.
Interesting.
Yes. So kind of depends. I would say you could lean on it saying, yeah, ghosts and this stuff are probably classified as a cryptid in a way. Because again, it's an entity.
Yeah.
It's not exactly a living creature, but, you know, it's still a thing. It is
an encounter that you can have.
Exactly.
Right. So that, basically, a cryptid is more so defined based off of the experience that you might have with it.
Yeah.
An encounter and a spooky one at that.
Usually, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Vampires, also in this category?
Yes. Romania has a huge thing with vampires.
All right.
So, again, you know, you had people, there's still people today that still believe that, you know, right. like Dracula was like a real thing. I mean, like Vlad the Impaler was where it's
We can dig into the history of these things, but, because they're very fascinating.
Yes.
One more that I'll throw in here just to see. Is this a cryptid? In today's episode of Is This a Cryptid? mummies. Zombies. Yes.
Mummies and zombies would still fall under that.
Fascinating.
Any form of a creature, like even religious things, is still technically in that category.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say religious things. In a conversation when we were preparing for this podcast, we talked about the idea of going into the religious aspect of these things. Personally, I didn't think it would be that interesting, because a lot of the time, at least in common religious parlance, we just look at stuff like that and we go, it's demonic, and that's it.
Well, it's not even just demons that fall in that category, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I'm saying demonic in the sense that defined as not of God, therefore don't mess with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what they tend to say. So there isn't like a ton of, you know, demonology is not very well studied, to be honest, in Christianity. Really not. It's also just not stuff that's useful to the public. I'll be perfectly honest in that sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But on the other hand, like, there is an interesting spiritual aspect to some of these things, and I think it's more so interesting in the realm of, like, something like theoretical physics than it is religion, to be honest, because I think about something like a ghost, and you've got to wonder, how does that exist? What does that say about the way life exists?
And how you exist, in a way, because if a ghost is actually based off a spirit of a person, then does that mean that we exist just in this dimension, or because of that, is there another part of you that moves around in another dimension?
I mean, until today, ethicists still can't really... Being brain dead is something that's very fuzzy as a medical term, because we don't know what parts of the brain need to be dead, and even people who are quote-unquote brain dead still have, like, functioning organs which do need neural input to continue working.
Yep.
So it is difficult to determine on that front, and that's because fundamentally we don't understand the brain, we don't understand the emergence of life, and we don't understand the occurrence of life and what makes the light bulb on versus off, in some sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And going back from that, I mean, the same could be said for these creatures we're going to be talking about today. We have no idea about all of what you just previously stated. We also have no idea if these are real or if these are just fiction. I'd probably, you know, lay on the side of more likely fiction, but
I think most of us safely do.
I would say most of us safely do.
It's at least not very integral to our belief systems to go that Bigfoot exists and he's out there.
No. If you are someone out there who does believe in Bigfoot, it would be great to hear what your perspective is.
Do you want to drop your social media handle?
you can hit us up on the Forest Creek.
Oh my God, my social media. Yeah, send us your crazy cryptid stories.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe a photo, if you took one.
Take your selfie with Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I'm saying, like, your average everyday person.
Yes.
Does not come into contact with cryptids.
No.
But you might go camping. You might see a spooky shadow in the woods. It might have just been a tree blowing in the wind. It might have been something nefarious.
You also could hear a scream just off in the distance.
That's very true. This is actually posing one question that I think we should land on right before we dig deeper. Are cryptids all evil?
No.
No.
They are not. Not all cryptids are evil. The idea that a cryptid is evil is more so because of film, books, that sort of thing. It's not so much...
They're always the monster in the horror movie.
Yeah, and There are definitely cryptids that are described as monsters because they are monsters in the folklore and the myth, but not all of them are that.
At the very least, we can kind of say, is a tiger evil? Not necessarily.
No.
No, but you can be eaten by a tiger.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there are, and that's the thing, it's like, are they actually evil or are they just, you know, if they are a real thing, are they just hunting? And you just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
So I think it would be best to start in terms of looking at these cryptids one by one. Bigfoot does kind of take, is the king of cryptids in some sense.
I'd say it's a tie between him and Mothman, but
Mothman is pretty up there.
Mothman's pretty up there. Same with the Leeds and Jersey Devil.
The Jersey Devil.
I'd say in international renown though, Bigfoot probably takes the cake, mainly because other cultures also have their own version of Bigfoot.
That is true, because we also have other names for it. We have Sasquatch,
and then Yeti.
The Yeti.
Yeah.
So to start with Bigfoot as we know him, at least to my understanding, Bigfoot is a Canadian phenomenon.
Yes.
Yeah. This is, again,
there's a question mark there.
A very hesitant yes, but like, where exactly does Bigfoot reside?
That would be more so between BC, Washington, and like, it's essentially the Rockies is where the main sightings of Bigfoot occur.
The Rockies territory, Northeast America.
Northwest America.
Northwest, sorry, my bad. Northwest America.
Yes.
Is Bigfoot distinct from Sasquatch, or is that just not a name, as we said?
Honestly, it's more of a naming thing than anything. The description of the creature is the same. Sasquatch is just, it's a, I believe it's Hakamalum for...
Interesting.
Like the name for it. Right. I believe that's where it came from. I need to fact check that one.
We should say your background is indigenous to North America.
Yes. I'm a part of the Anishinaabe peoples. My tribe is located in Manitoba.
Right. Or the area that is now called Manitoba, at least.
Exactly, yeah, yes. Yeah.
So what kind of... Is there like a background lore to what kind of cryptids emerge in the folklore of indigenous cultures?
Yeah, most of the cryptids that emerge from indigenous cultures are stories that are supposed to guide you to, you know, be a better person, to lead the good life, essentially. And that's at least from what my people's, like, they don't have a religion. They have, like, a belief system, though. And the translation for it is the good life.
Right.
And
does that kind of imply, at least in the public imagination, that's like a harmony with nature?
Yeah, we're stewards of the world, of the land. That's what we're supposed to be. And it's about community. It's about you know, respecting nature and whatnot, respecting each other. That's all part of it. And the stories for most of the folklore and whatnot from our culture is, it's rooted in stories to try and make sure that you be that better person.
So when a cryptid emerges in one of these stories, is it kind of a monster of the story? Is it the guide of the story? Is it a warning?
Depends on the story. Some stories, it's about a guide. It's usually a great spirit of some sort.
Interesting.
If it's a monster of a story, it is still technically a great spirit. It's just, we also don't have evil spirits. That's not what we have. We have contrast spirits. So what a contrast spirit is essentially it's one that can be good or one that can be bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Much like a tiger.
Much like a tiger.
Or in the sense that the tiger can be good in the sense that it's part of nature and something unique.
Yeah.
But then it can be bad if you cross it the wrong way.
Exactly. Right. Now, there's definitely some that more lean towards being the bad. And there's other ones that are just kind of right down the middle, and it's about how you, you know, how you act as a person. If you're greedy and selfish, usually the story revolves around, you know, a cryptid that's, or a creature that's, you know, not exactly the nice thing to be around.
Right.
And in other instances, that very same spirit could be also a good influence or a guide. Just depends on... It's about you as the person.
So if we circle towards Bigfoot here,
Yes.
How does Bigfoot emerge in these stories?
Bigfoot is it's a different one for me because my people don't have really a big story about Bigfoot at all.
Right.
That's more of like, you know, West Coast kind of stuff.
Right, West Coast tribes or something would.
From what I can understand, Bigfoot, it's most people think it's a giant ape man that walks through the woods. They're not wrong.
Right.
I don't necessarily know the story exactly behind Bigfoot from the folklore, but it's just a creature that's trying to live its life.
If I was to kind of pin it down in an agnostic sense, I might talk about how, okay, we know that there's a story about Gigantopithecus existing several tens of thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
An earlier stage in, or an offshoot of the evolution that eventually led to humans.
Mm-hmm.
There was also supposedly on an island somewhere, there was a species of shorter humans.
Yes.
That also like mini Bigfoots that existed.
Well, not big feet, but yes.
Mini feet.
Yes, the mini feet. That's actually, those skeletons and fossils of those people actually were dug up mostly through like Indonesia. That's where they were found. Yeah. And yeah, they were like a lot shorter stature. I forget the actual name.
Basically, Homo sapiens. Evolving from Australopithecus or whatever earlier stage.
Yeah.
Evolution branched off, and one of those branches led to us being the way we are.
Yep.
And one of those branches led to Gigantopithecus.
Yes.
And Gigantopithecus, for whatever reason, found himself outcompeted by humans.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Seemingly, at least. And was almost entirely wiped out except for the existence of Bigfoot, the last remaining member of the species. Whether or not there would need to be multiple Bigfoots in order to continue this lineage is a topic of interest.
You would definitely need to. There is no...
Unless one of these Bigfoots is somehow immortal.
That's where it delves more into Bigfoot being more than just a creature. That's right. Where it delves into him being like a greater spirit.
A spiritual entity.
Yes.
In that sense.
I doubt from the... You know, the more of a, from more of a Bigfoot enthusiast standpoint of, you know, being, you know, like, oh yeah, he exists and whatnot. We're not looking at him like a spirit. We're looking at him as like a creature
that
you could potentially find out in the world and like you'll observe him living.
It would be really disappointing to all these long bearded guys who hide all day in the forest looking for Bigfoot if they found out he's a spiritual entity that appears in your imagination.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of like an offshoot, we can imagine there's like a tiny hidden tribe of Bigfoots.
Yeah, you'd have to.
That would just kind of be hiding somewhere around the Rockies. And then I guess they're lone wanderers. They tend to avoid interactions with humans and hide as much as possible away from them.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And then in terms of the intelligence of this type of creature, at least intelligent enough to stay one step ahead in terms of hiding from us.
I would say... Yes. I mean, if you look at most animals in the wild, and I'm not talking, like I'm talking here in North America, typically most animals, what they do when they're, you know, engaged by something they're not familiar with, they run away and they observe because they don't know where you belong in the food chain. They don't know if you're a predator or if you're in fact prey or if you're just, you know, another creature that's wandering around.
I mean, even if they were felt confident they could take you, I mean, if... Whatever Gigantopithecus' size, it's much larger than the average human.
It would be roughly 8 to 10 feet tall.
And in terms of a physical contest, you or I probably wouldn't be matching up with Bigfoot.
No. If you're talking about based off of what they, you know about Gigantopithecus and whatnot, the thing could wrestle. It could wrestle a bear, and probably win.
And he doesn't know if we're poisonous.
No,
which is probably a pretty good reason to avoid interaction.
Exactly.
They would probably, over the years, figure out that we have guns.
Most definitely.
That's the reason why I think humans can beat any cryptid, is we've got guns.
Could do this. I think humans could beat most cryptids.
At least not the ghosts.
At least not the ghosts or the spirits.
Have to figure something out, put some magnets up or something for the ghosts.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Bigfoot, multiple names, as we said. How much do you know about the names of Bigfoot and where they each come from?
Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and...
At least the Yeti, I've also been told, is, like, from Nepal.
Yeah. I believe that's more from Nepal.
So we could almost wonder if like that's some kind of Gigantopithecus from a different part of the world.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
That would be, yeah, that's more based in the Himalayas and whatnot. It's like a local legend about the abominable snowman.
Yeah.
The Yeti. I mean, they're not...
Actually, this is an interesting point because I've also heard that the abominable snowman is like a northern Canada, kind of.
I actually hadn't heard that. I'm guessing it's what, Yukon Northwest Territories more so?
Something in that area, yeah. Perhaps, yeah.
Probably just a polar bear.
Probably just a polar bear that stood up one day.
Probably. Like, yeah, and they're like, oh my god, it's 12 feet tall.
I guess we could focus on the names Bigfoot and Sasquatch.
Yes.
Because Bigfoot, I feel, is the Canadian name, and Sasquatch would be the American one. Is that correct, or is it flipped around?
Flip that, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, Bigfoot is more of an American name than Canadian one.
Yeah. It would be very Canadian for us to use the actual.
That right there was definitely one of the crows from
another cryptid.
From another cryptid, yeah.
Yeah, I just had to sneak a word in here.
Yeah.
Friends with Bigfoot. So
friends with Bigfoot? What do you mean?
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they know each other. I feel like there's a cryptid club.
There's a cryptid club.
I don't know. It's a very DreamWorks, you know, thing to exist, isn't it? There's Hotel Transylvania.
If there was ever a cryptid club, you would probably see the Jersey Devil and Mothman hanging out because they're not that far apart.
We'll jump right into that very soon because I'm actually interested in what these are. But to stick on Bigfoot for a second, characteristics of Bigfoot being a tall, 8-foot, ape-looking creature who hides from humans,
yeah.
Evil or not evil, we kind of can just classify him to be an animal.
I would say that if he was real, it's just an animal. He's just walking around.
People have been looking for this supposed creature for decades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Popularized, I believe, in the 70s, and then like national parks that would claim to have them, and that kind of brought a lot of tourism.
There is one hilarious video of somebody in a Bigfoot zoo walking that was supposedly passed off as evidence of Bigfoot existing, despite it being, like, hilariously obviously faked.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not surprising.
Is it Harrison Hot Springs where there's, like, a Bigfoot trail?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a... I believe it takes you up West Harrison Mountain.
Yeah.
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 But they put like these big footprints on the ground and you can follow them.
Yeah.
It's a fun tourist attraction, kind of.
It is, and that's the thing is it's and when you said he's the king of cryptids, this is exactly why. You actually have tourism, and not just in this province.
Yeah.
In other provinces and other states, all centered around this mysterious creature.
This might be my favorite aspect of cryptids, is their market value.
Oh yeah, you can sell a lot of Bigfoot stuff.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, each cryptid has had a very significant value in terms of how well they can be popularized in media, what kind of books can you sell, what kind of movies can you sell.
Yep.
Bigfoot is interesting because it's great for tourism.
Yep.
Not awesome for movies.
Surprisingly good for games.
Games?
Games, yeah.
Can you give me a...
There's literally a game called Bigfoot.
Wow.
And you hunt Bigfoot.
Just...
with, like, four of your friends who are investigating a bunch of national parks. It's like Yosemite Park. There's one up in Canada. I forget the name of the park. There's the Redwoods. Like, all these areas are popularized to have Bigfoot in it. And
yeah,
it sets you in those places, and you can actually play with five people where one person is Bigfoot.
I think the thing that doesn't always compete with this, or that doesn't always seem to click, is that we have gotten tremendously advanced in our technology.
Yeah.
Cameras, thermal imaging, satellite imaging, all kinds of radar tracking, whatever the heck we're going to use to find Bigfoot. We've gotten more and more of it. It's become more and more complex, and still none of us has actually managed to catch a sight of this guy.
I think the thing you got to remember with it, though, is that the people that are actively looking for him may not have the funds to acquire that kind of tech.
Yeah.
There are definitely some who do, and I think if they're looking where they're looking, I mean, results are net zero.
Which does kind of lead to an interesting idea that what if Bigfoot is more of a spiritual entity, like you said before?
Mm.
In that case, it would make a lot of sense that he could appear or disappear.
Yeah, just be seen when he wants to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that if we're talking the full scope of what a cryptid could be, and a cryptid could be a spirit, then in this case, yeah, maybe Bigfoot is just a spirit.
I'll dig into a bit of an aside here. There's a physicist named Sir Roger Penrose, who kind of hypothesized about the nature of life. And if you look at the way that the brain works, we can't quite determine where life is in the brain. We can start to isolate certain functions and examine the way it works out. But for all we seem to understand is that the brain is like the physical facet of this existence of life. Which leads us to believe that if there is a neural network, like a brain, then this creates the possibility of a quantum field existing. And this quantum field would open up the possibility of something from an extra-dimensional source kind of coming into synchronicity with the human being in that way. So if this extra-dimensional thing also exists, can exist on its own, or if the nature of quantum fields opening and closing here and there can also lead to other kind of anomalies of this sort, then we can have, you know, a bit of an explanation for something existing extra-dimensionally, like a spirit, and then coming into a three-dimensional space, crossing over like that, like, say, the spirit of Bigfoot might.
And if you're talking about synchronicity with the person in that case, it might not just be that they're necessarily crossing over, but a projection of them is now visible because your brain can process it because of that synchronicity. Because that's the idea, right? Because you have like your retinal nerve, and the retinal nerve would then be given this information to then showcase where it would be in relation to your position if all planes are, oh my goodness, if all planes are on the same, you know, kind of sandwiched on top of each other, but everyone moves in the same. It's like, I don't know if you've ever seen those trippy like color space things where it's like, it shows the same person moving in the same spot, but in different colors. It's like that, essentially, for a dimension thing.
Yes, yeah.
And it's an interesting idea.
And it's something that people think about, like, oh, when maybe on the effect of hallucinogenics, some people believe that, you know, your brain becomes expanded to be able to perceive these things more occasionally. It's the kind of impetus for a lot of vision questing.
Yeah, that, and actually it's starvation. That's also one of those.
Also does fit into the same thing,
cause hallucinations and whatnot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Bigfoot can easily appear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you're starting to, you know, not have exactly the correct chemicals going where they're supposed to, you can see, you can definitely see some things that aren't, you know, actually there or supposed to be there, but your mind,
whether it is creates. Your mind expanding to be able to perceive a quantum field,
exactly,
or you're very hungry,
or your
brain has all the pieces to make Bigfoot
100%. You know what it looks like from media.
You know what monkeys look like. You know what humans look like. You know how something would walk in a humanoid fashion. If your perception of space is off, you can tell if something's very large or very small.
Yeah, and at the same time, you can also see, just from all of our different media sources, the different wide variety of what Bigfoot looks like and whatever it was that fits for you for that image.
So the next, you know, we were also contending in terms of popularity of cryptids. Why is Mothman popular? Where does Mothman come from?
Mothman is from Point Pleasant, West Virginia. There it is. It's always somewhere on the East Coast that some of these creepy cryptids come from. I mean, like, you have the Appalachian Mountains there where there's some really crazy stuff. But Silver Bridge, which collapsed in 1967, really, you know, there was sightings of him there. During the bridge's collapse and after. And before that, though, there was actually...
Can you tell us a little bit about how Mothman emerges around the collapse of this bridge?
Pretty much as the bridge collapses, people believe they see him standing on top of one of the...
just on some high point on...
It's like where the cabling goes, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, like the cabling pillar, essentially.
Was it believed that, like, Mothman...
He caused it, yeah.
Caused the collapse of the bridge.
That was the belief, is that... Essentially, he caused the collapse of this bridge. He's the bringer of bad times.
Bridge, and that's the first quote-unquote sighting that we have of Mothman.
No, that is not the first sighting of Mothman.
So where does the Mothman legend originate?
It still originates in West Virginia. It was actually a teenager driving home at night who claimed to have seen Mothman as he was driving home. And then 90 miles away, very same night, a couple driving down the road also saw the creature. Oh, wait, sorry. It's not a teenager. It was the couple first, 90 miles down the road, a police officer claims to have also seen the creature. Same description. Large glowing red eyes with massive black wings and a huge profile to it. It's about the size of a man.
What's the lead hypothesis as to what Mothman is?
For an actual creature that I might have been mistaken with. A lot of it is with a type of two birds. There are two types of birds that it is currently believed to actually have been. One of them was an owl that was believed to be what Mothman actually was. And the other one, it's kind of like a stork. I don't know how best to describe. I don't remember the name of it.
I mean,
but it has red like colorations around the eyes.
Does Mothman originate in the folklore of any indigenous culture?
No, it's
like West Virginian.
This
folklore.
Is West Virginian. West Virginia. Folklore.
If I was gonna give a guess here, I would guess that Mothman, if Mothman is real, it's like an American military experiment gone sideways. There are files, reportedly, at least if I'm quoting Alex Jones, there are documents supporting experiments about human-animal hybrid people that have been created. And Mothman seems to have fit underneath that category. Now, does Mothman have military applications? I think so. Could you imagine sending him out to Iran and making him chew bridge cables?
Do they even have that many bridges?
I don't even know, but
I think it's mainly stone bridges. So.
There goes your entire textile industry. Iran.
Yeah, it's gone. All your fabrics, they're gone.
Yeah, that's what Mothman does. If there's no uniforms, they can't fight.
Exactly.
But on the more serious note, is Mothman a nefarious type of thing?
He's a bad omen. So yes, he'd be a nefarious type of.
Is this because of the one bridge collapsing? Because that's almost like letting your cat just knock something off of a counter.
Yeah, it's mainly because of the bridge collapse.
Okay. Yeah, it's not necessarily that like people see Mothman and then they crash their cars and have a bad day or something.
I mean, if you're staring at it while you're driving, then you'll probably crash your cars anyways.
But it's just this one story about Mothman.
Well, the main one, yes.
The main one. Yeah. So there are other like sightings, quote unquote.
There's other people have claimed to have sighted him over like in the 80s as well. He's mainly on the side of a road or chasing them while they drive.
Just saw the lights on the back of the car and just got interested or something?
Pretty much. You know, moth to a flame.
Moth to a flame. Except why is Mothman beams. Then so popular? This sounds like to be honest, it sounds a lot weaker of a story than Bigfoot or Dracula.
It's more popular actually because of a movie.
Oh.
Yeah, there's that Mothman movie that came out in like the early 2000s, I believe.
Oh.
And it actually gained like international fame because of that movie.
Did you see this movie?
I watched it way, way back when it first came out once. And I think I was probably, I don't know, like 10 or 11.
Do you recall it being like a horror movie?
It's a horror movie.
Okay, yeah. So Mothman is chewing on people.
Yeah, he's like ripping people apart.
I see.
Mothman is supposed to be a terrifying entity in this film. And again, this is where like the inspiration comes from, you know, West Virginia for the Mothman movie about actual Mothman. Except Mothman in all sightings and folklore has never actually actively killed someone. It's just movies take it to the extreme.
You're making me feel at this, like if I'm the bouncer at the Cryptid Club and Mothman shows up, I'm like looking at his ID being like, nah, you can't come in. I'm sorry, Mothman, you're just not that interesting.
I mean, it's the same with Bigfoot. Bigfoot's really not that interesting.
Yeah, it's a very basic story, but Bigfoot has better marketing, is what I'm trying to say.
Bigfoot has better marketing, and it's the only marketing is, oh, he's mysterious, and you can maybe catch a glimpse of him.
Look, Jack Black sang a song about him. Tenacious D movie, yeah.
That's fair, yes.
Pengu, is that another name for Bigfoot? Is that a real one? Do the Sasquatch eyes. And you know the Sasquatch flies. Sasquatch is my daddy, and he wants to protect me.
I love that you actually know the words to that song and the lyrics, because I have no idea. Skunk Ape, apparently, from Florida. Apparently Florida has their own.
Has their own Sasquatch?
Yeah. Even Australia does, apparently, according to their Aboriginal stories. It's called Yowie.
That's surprisingly close to Yahweh.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's Central Asia, it's Almas. Similar thing.
What? A quick note on Australia.
You said Pendek?
Papengu.
Oh, Papengu. No, that's actually not one of them. I don't know what Papengu is.
Thanks, Jack Black. You lied to us. But, so continuing to dig into, are there other North American cryptids that stick out to you? What are ones that you would like to talk about?
Honestly, there's like the most popular one besides Sasquatch that is a Canadian and, like Northern United States cryptid that is super popular, especially in like video game media.
What's the name?
That'd be the Wendigo.
The Wendigo.
Yeah.
Am I saying that correctly? Wendigo?
Wendigo is the actual...
Wendigo.
Yeah, because it's W... If you were to break it down into the sounds, it's W-I-N-D-I-G-O.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And, it's, yeah, it's a very interesting cryptid, especially how many places it's featured. There was a film that actually took place here in BC for a lot of the filming, up in, like, the Lions Bay area, like, near Squamish. They did a movie on it. It's not accurate.
What is the accurate nature of Wendigo before we get into the way he's portrayed in media? What is the story? How does it originate?
So the story originates actually with the Anishinaabe people, which is they're mainly in like Ontario, Montreal, like the eastern part of Manitoba, like the southeastern part. And then a couple of the northern United States, like Montana and North and South Dakota, kind of in the Great Lakes area. To preface this, before I get started into what the Wendigo is, these areas are often subjected to really harsh winters, like terribly harsh winters. And the original story of the Wendigo comes because of a harsh winter. And it's about a selfish man who doesn't share with the tribe, is kind of, you know, not banished, but no one helps him because he's so selfish.
And now in the middle of this harsh winter.
And in the middle of this harsh winter, when they ran out of food, he is so hungry and so desperate to eat that he eats his family.
Oh.
That's where it came from.
So the Wendigo is a cannibal.
Yes, it's the ultimate taboo. Or not the ultimate, but one of the greater taboos in Anishinaabe's like culture is cannibalism.
Right.
We don't do that.
Which is a pretty big taboo everywhere else, to be honest.
Not everywhere. I mean, South America, that's a thing.
Most places. This is an interesting one because whereas Bigfoot was like an earlier evolutionary state of man.
Yeah.
And Mothman might be some kind of human-animal hybrid. Wendigo is somebody... is a man who was transformed by his evil deeds. How does the Wendigo appear in the traditional like legend?
So the legend, after he eats his family, essentially what happens is he grows. So that's why like the original depiction of a Wendigo is a gaunt, lanky man with glowing red eyes. And that comes from the idea that he is forever hungry, because every time he feasts on flesh, he grows even. It's never enough to satiate him, so he becomes more and more hungry.
Interesting.
So
it's like a curse.
It's a curse. The Wendigo is also considered a contrast spirit. More on the bad. This is why the reason why though, is because it's a person that does this. So because you and I, according to culture, we have our own spirits. So when our spirit gives into doing something that is selfish or greedy or something like that, or, you know, embarking in a terrible taboo, then you're no longer a good spirit. You're now, you know, you could have been good, but now you're being bad. Now you've, you know, indulged in something that you shouldn't have. And because of that, you're cursed.
Right.
Yes. So what happens after that is essentially he goes off, wanders into the woods, and then he waits for people to appear and hunts them and eats them.
We were talking about, you and I have our own spirits. Our spirits get...
Right, yes. So this is... When you commit something heinous like this, then you become a contrast spirit, and then you're cursed. And that's what happened to this man, the first Wendigo. And he just stalks the forests and waits for people to stray from the tribe during harsh winters specifically, and then eats them. And when he eats them, he grows larger because he can never satiate his hunger. That's the curse.
I mean, if we're talking about that sign, it's like the interesting curse that no matter how many calories you take in, your physical form continues to expand so that it's not enough calories.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he gets hungrier every time, too. That's the other thing. It's torture.
Does the Wendigo ever shrink?
I mean, when he grows, it's not like he's not growing muscles.
Yeah.
He's just, his limbs elongate. He gets a little bit taller, more gaunt. The best description of him is a lanky, like his arms are far longer than they're supposed to be.
Yeah,
it's like Marfan syndrome kind of description, except he's got tattered like skin from being so
literally stretched out.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating.
Yeah, there's another story afterwards about a man who comes to the village and hears about him and hunts him and kills him. Supposedly like
a heroic tale.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the hero in the tale, but there is a tale about it. But the Wendigo, that description is not used at all except in like I want to say one piece of media that I know, and that would be Until Dawn,
right?
Which is a kind of like a story-based video game where it's more QuickTime events than anything else. And that's where it has the closest to accurate like depiction.
What's the more common depiction?
The most common depiction that we see is something that is cloaked.
A cloaked kind of
tall,
bestial creature with an animal skull over its head.
It has like a deer skull with antlers.
With antlers.
That's really what it usually depicts.
Kind of fitting into the occult nature.
Yeah, yeah.
Things. Yeah.
So that's the most common depiction of it. Is it the most accurate? Not to the old folklore.
Now, Wendigo was also the topic of some fictional stories by one of our favorite authors, H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
Lovecraft was famously xenophobic of lots and lots of things. So anything that kind of crept into his consciousness, he literally made a story about air conditioning being evil. It's a pretty good story, too. It's pretty fantastic. But Wendigo is one of his interesting stories, along with a lot of other creatures. There are cryptids that have been cited that are also documented in Lovecraft? Like, what do you tend to come across? What did you come across when you were kind of researching for this?
Like, for the Lovecraft side of stuff?
Yeah.
There's a lot of cryptids that he kind of describes. Mostly all of his things on like outer gods are considered in a weird way their own cryptids, like Cthulhu and stuff. Like people, there are cults that believe in this stuff.
There's real cults of Cthulhu.
Oh yeah, there's 100% there are.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Would have thought that was like entirely fictional.
No, I mean, that's the thing. If someone can be brainwashed, you will be brainwashed into believing anything.
It's kind of like how we were saying, if you have all the pieces to make up Bigfoot in your head, when you can hallucinate, you can, yeah. Yeah.
And that's exactly it. And what we see with some of his monsters, he comes with, like the Dunwich Horror, for example, horrifying monster that he's envisioned. And like a lot of it takes place on the East Coast, of course, where he like wrote a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, that's where he lived.
And, so, you know, like he talks about like Arkham a lot. He talks about these different places with all these different monsters that could exist. I find he probably took some inspiration from part of it's from like biblical texts. Some of it, I think, is taken from.
There's ancient Egyptian influence.
Yeah.
There's even like Wendigo, like you said, there's some indigenous influence
as well, yes.
There's his own fear of like undersea creatures and outer space things. That's what kind of coalesces into Cthulhu.
Exactly. He's living in a coastal area.
There's even a few characters from Greek myth that show up. which is really interesting. Nodens, for instance, is like a kind of a Neptunian kind of character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. But he's also written about ghouls and goblins and stuff like that.
And you know, the funny thing is ghouls, at least how they're described, it's a really similar description to what a Wendigo is.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. It's a gaunt, lanky creature that has tattered-looking grayish skin.
With the exception of cloven hooves.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that traditionally part of Wendigo's description?
No. No. It's traditionally, he looks like a misshapen man.
Right.
That's the traditional look of what a Wendigo is.
And then I think over time, people have added more bestial elements to him.
Yeah. I mean, like Pet Sematary, for example, it's like a... You know, they did a movie, a recent movie on it, like a reboot from the Stephen King classic. They depict what the current looking Wendigo from what, you know, media kind of portrays in it. He's like shown in a shot off in the distance as this guy buries his cat to bring it back. There's other ones too, like the one like I was talking about that was filmed up here in Squamish. That one has a very different look. It's like this hulking creature with like the deer mask on it.
While we're on the bestial type of creatures, I do want to do a bit of a pivot here. Mm. Werewolves, are these an American thing?
Like the origins of werewolves?
Oh, yeah, is it a North American?
No. Werewolves are, it's like an old, well, technically it'd be a Roman thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where does that come in? Like, what's the story about? Does it have something to do with like Romulus being kind of like a wolf?
Yes. Yeah. Skin? Yeah. Exactly. Okay, interesting. Yeah. Like it's like a skinwalker essentially.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's more of a North American thing. Like skinwalkers. Skinwalkers are things.
Right. What is a skinwalker?
Skinwalkers are people that can change into animals.
So they start as people.
Then they can shape change at will.
What does this entail? Like, can you give us a little bit more context?
Like, usually it's like a hermit, like it's like a more of a hermity person who lives separate on their own, who has been cursed by like an animal spirit so that they can change into that animal spirit.
Now when we talk about cursed by an animal spirit, is this an indigenous reference as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like a, it's like the spirit of an animal, not like the, not like a greater spirit.
Right.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of this curse? Is it like...
It's usually like mistreatment of the animal, for example.
Oh, I see.
We're stewards, like, again, we're stewards of the land as part of our belief, right? So you need to, you take when you're supposed to take.
So then the spirit appears, wolf poacher, you are cruel to the wolves, the poetic justice of...
You turn into a wolf.
We've now cursed you to turn into a wolf.
Yeah. You can turn back,
yeah,
but you also are starving and act more animalistic.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's almost like it puts the need inside of you to turn into a wolf. And if you don't, you will begin to exhibit those qualities anyway until you do it almost.
Exactly.
Without.
Yeah.
Now, does this kind of, the skinwalker mythos, is this what feeds into our idea of werewolves?
For modern werewolves? Like how we describe them? Yeah. And the idea is that, you know, well, I mean, the idea for werewolves, it originates with the idea of lycanthropy, which is being bitten by something infected, and then you change into a monster form of it, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the lycanthropy stuff, again, comes somewhat from the same region as...
It's kind of an extrapolated skinwalker curse.
Yeah. Yeah. They give more description of how it happens, and it's more... That's more, like, European influence, not really North American influence, that side of stuff. The werewolves of media are influenced mainly from those things.
From Europe.
Yeah. Old European legends.
Yeah.
The first, like, besides, you know,
which
ancient Egypt, the first undead kind of thing is I believe it's based in one of, like, I think it's Spain or something, where the first, or not the first one, mummies are the first, like... Fear of the undead, for example.
It's interesting, like, the Pharaoh's curse in Egypt doesn't really actually entail mummies coming and walking out from the dead. But the whole point was that the Pharaoh's getting buried.
Yeah.
So we don't want anybody to come in here and steal his stuff. We're going to put a bunch of curses on the wall to say that if you take the treasure, the Pharaoh has forever cursed you. And whatever this means is usually more something on bad luck. Maybe it's something that impacts your afterlife. But then the Mummy movies and, you know, Abbott and Costello wandering into the pyramids and then, you know, the Pharaoh comes out to chase them around. That's kind of what put the idea of rising back up from the dead for it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the Egyptians really treated death as very sacred, so they wouldn't see to violate it that way.
Yeah.
In terms of having, you know, the Pharaoh come out of his coffin and do all that.
That's fair.
But in terms of zombies, I feel that the zombies originate their lore in voodoo.
Interesting.
Which is when the shamanic traditions of Africa were imported alongside with the slave trade into the kind of Central America for the purposes of these slave trade, and then, you know, the shamanic traditions kind of followed along, and then they saw their own unique twist as well, kind of bringing zombies into the foray.
Yeah, actually, you're completely correct. The first stories of the undead come from voodoo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, you know, gets taken and bent a little bit in the public consciousness, in the sense that, at least in our understanding of it, it's very Walking Dead. This is a disease that has spread. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in that same way that we look at, there's quite a few movies that treat the zombie as a disease.
Oh yeah, especially it's like the newer stuff, like 28 Days Later, for example. It's like, oh, the zombie is like, or well, they don't call it a zombie, they call it an infected.
It's like in human nature to look at a lot of these supernatural or paranormal phenomena and try to break it down using science.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's like, why not just leave it be as a...
Like we said, like, we have to take Bigfoot, a spirit, and turn it into Gigantopithecus.
Yeah.
And, well, at least we discovered something that did kind of correlate to it, and now we feel we understand it.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Same thing kind of with ghosts. Whenever you're watching one of these shows where the guy's like, oh my god, they're just like, is the whole show just people walking around houses using thermal imagery and holding up some kind of strange ghost sensing device and then breathing really heavily and being panicked?
Honestly, so I
turn the lights on.
It's more so probably people just panicking a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch some of the things too and you're just like you can go on Amazon and you can buy the equipment that they use.
Yeah.
EMF readers, which is electromagnetic frequency readers, which you could use on any electronic to get the same response. It's like, well, maybe you're actually just hitting, you know, the boom mic that's above your head.
Yeah.
That's causing it for the EMF levels.
I like the parts when they stop. It's like, I think there's a presence here. I'm going to call out. Hello?
I always love the meme of the guy. He's like, what's going on, demons? It's your boy. He's just in the basement of a place. And it's like, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, some of these ghost hunting shows, they're entertaining. Entertaining. Especially ones where, like, you see them, like, you know, the crap sauce or whatever. And you're like, okay, that's a lot. Chill out, guys.
Yeah.
You're doing it for show.
And on the topic of ghosts, you know, if we go back to this idea that this is a quantum field.
Yeah.
That life exists in. And that life is truly...
That was weird.
That life is actually a very extra-dimensional in its nature. And so the extra-dimensional qualities can stick around even when the three-dimensional ones that we're familiar with pass on.
Yeah.
So the memory of a ghost can linger around in the space. And when we think about memory that lingers, we often think about things that are traumatic.
Yeah.
You shared to me a video... or a graphic earlier talking about different horror movies, and the Blair Witch Project is very famous.
Oh yeah. Blair Witch Project, especially the 1994 version where it's been updated from the old version.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the Blair Witch is?
The Blair Witch is like a legend about a witch that lived in the woods who, she died. I think she was burned alive, and then she haunts this house that she lived in, and all those who enter she torments and does not let them leave until she kills them eventually. The Blair Witch is, and it's not just the house though, it's like this huge acreage area that she covers, and apparently it's like different spells or whatever that she left around that.
I did study a little bit and read into occultism and the practices of magic and their various traditions, because it is very wide. And there is a modern practice of Wiccany as well, and there are modern interpretations of different shamanic practices that come from, you know, ancient traditions. But there, it is important to acknowledge that, like, some of the practices associated with witchcraft are satanic in nature.
Oh, there's, and that's the thing, is that when you talk about the practices of these different things, shamanic, Wiccan, and witchcraft, those aren't synonymous. They're three very different things.
Very different.
If you talk about witchcraft, like true witchcraft, like, it's not, there are parts of it that are considered, yeah, very satanic, very occult, in the sense of they're not meant to help people. They're meant to curse people and harm people.
When in fact, a lot of witchcraft, quote unquote, is gardening. There's a lot of gardening.
A lot of apothecary stuff. There's a lot of stuff,
you know, energies and crystals and things like that. Just kind of a lot of woo-woo stuff.
Wicca also
combined with, you know, some divination practices of understanding symbols and you know, interpreting them whenever you put down the tarot cards for people.
Yeah.
And then there is, of course, the actual, like, attempts at performing ritual magic, and those can be as simple as lighting a candle and speaking a name. Or it can be sacrificing small animals or people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
yeah. Some of the, and that's the thing as well, some of the shamanic practices in certain parts of the world delve a little bit into the sacrificial things.
Yeah.
I think the thing that defines Wicca away from that is the fact that it's more like oracle kind of stuff.
It's a lot more divination focused.
It is not
a lot of
really
more astrology.
Yes,
and more,
it's not focused on enacting
actual
things,
spiritual
here.
Transactions.
It's like metaphysics stuff. Yeah, as long as if you're from that perspective, 100%.
Yeah,
it's interesting to see the different practices of sacrificial practices that different, you know, religions do that still do it, and why they utilize it. I think the thing, though, when it comes to the whole, you know, cryptid, like the creepy things that we're talking about and stuff, the thing that we have to remember is the witch stuff, that can also be considered a cryptid.
Yeah, that's interesting, because just like the Wendigo, that's a human.
That's a human that's doing...
A human that has kind of been transformed.
Exactly.
And in some way, when we look at a witch, no, they didn't start out with green skin. No. This was a woman who...
Well, and that's the other thing. That's a very popular, like, media thing to make them have that. That's why when you go to the store and you buy, like, your witch costume for Halloween, they always, like, show them with either... Well, they used to always show them with, like, a big boil on their nose.
Yeah, with warts or something.
They're all green, they have long ears, they have really long chins that don't make any sense, like...
They've kind of become deformed by the evil of their practices.
That's the media portrayal of it.
Yeah.
If you were to talk about a real witch, I doubt you would see that.
You can go on Tinder and find a girl that says Wicca in her profile. It doesn't look like that.
No.
No.
Still, again, separate things.
Well,
witch and Wicca, they're not exactly the same. If you talk, you can still find girls on Tinder with witch in their profile.
Yeah, that's true.
And again, they don't look the same. They don't look like what you see in media. I mean, the thing that pulled it away from that, I think, especially in more recent times, probably Hocus Pocus. Like
Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, like the Salem story. Like, But it's like the funny one that they did in the 90s, and then they did that reboot recently. In like 2022, again, three sister witches. I mean, it's comedy.
Yeah,
but it pulled away from
Sabrina,
the whole
the teenage witch as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it pulled away from the green skinned version of them.
Harry Potter kind of plays a bit of a role in
a huge role in that
popularization of like occultism and magic.
More magic than anything else, but
it is pretty invented as well. It's not borrowing from ancient traditions or anything.
It's actually more inspired by other media than anything else.
That's very true.
It's not really, it's like it part of it's inspired by it.
It's a picture of a picture in that way.
And that's the thing about any sort of film that you're watching right now for Halloween or something, or Halloween, or for, you know, whatever, like you know, Autumn Harvest. It's all inspired by something else from folklore.
So I want to step back a little bit and get back to lycanthropy.
Okay.
In terms of whenever we see people hunting lycanthropy, silver is involved. Yeah. Is there a reason for this?
I'm not sure the exact reason for it. I know in the story of the Wendigo, for example, silver is also something that's used to kill them. So I don't know if it's borrowing from that. It could be...
Why is silver the element?
It's because it's pure.
Purity.
Yeah.
Also something that kind of glows and almost seems a little bit divine.
More ethereal. Yeah, okay. It's a precious thing to remove a spirit. I think that's where it kind of comes to at the core of it all. Especially for any time that silver is involved. Like, silver is mainly used with, lycanthropy. Some stories, especially that have been adapted for different, board games and whatnot, silver is it's like a holy thing.
Yeah.
You use silver to, for example, some board games, use it to kill vampires.
So, in the... Let's dive now into the vampire myth.
Yeah.
The Transylvanian...
Yes.
...story. As I'm familiar with it, Vlad the Impaler was an especially cruel... I don't know if the stories really say that he was cruel to his own people in particular, but when he was waging war against the Ottoman Empire...
He was extremely cruel.
He was extremely cruel, and known specifically for impaling people.
Yes.
By sticking... splaying their limbs out and then sticking a very large wooden stake up from between their legs and causing them to become slowly impaled on it as it was stood up, so that it would be a tree of a person who is dying in the process as that gravity slowly continues to impale them on this thing.
Yeah.
And that later on, when Vlad the Impaler died, the myth goes that he was so evil, even hell spat him back out.
Yeah.
And thus began the legend of Dracula, who is Vlad the Impaler kind of taking on a modern, calling himself a count, living in a castle in Transylvania, kind of ruling over the same place he used to live, but as a shadow of himself.
Yeah, not able to go into the light of
day. And he's kind of cursed in the sense that he can't enjoy the pleasures of life, he can't go out in the sun.
No.
And he's forced to subsist on drinking blood. In the way that he was kind of as a poetic justice for him being very bloodthirsty in life.
And actually, funny enough, I think part of the reason that the whole drinking blood thing came part of it, there was rumor surrounding him when he did kill his victims that he did drink their blood while they were...
Yeah.
When he was alive.
No, he was very actually known to be a cannibal in life.
Yeah. Which is why,
As an intimidation factor that I will feast on my enemies and... that I will actually make my enemies feast on their friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, it also explains the whole, the original myth and lore around, vampire thralls, for example.
Yeah.
He would make you drink of another person, right?
Right.
So, it's an interesting, it's a really interesting kind of, lore piece just surrounding Vlad the Impaler, because it is a real historical figure.
Yeah.
That it's drawn inspiration
and came to inspire the story about this count.
And the thing about it, though, and because they always have, how you defeat so-and-so or whatever, or where they always stalk is more so of what... It's a lot of stalking in folklore. I don't know what it is, but there is a lot of,
there is a very, bestial nature to a lot of the monsters, so their narrow tanks on the practices of hunting then surround whatever we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And monster hunting kind of takes on aspects of beast hunting in regular everyday practice.
Exactly. But at the core root of these stories, there's reasons they were made. The reasons maybe not for to say, hey, there's actually a guy out there, but it's usually stories that they told their children. So their children would behave and
Grimm's
not.
Fairy tales kind of fall into this area.
Yep. Grimm's fairy tales.
The big bad wolf is going to come eat you if you go out into that forest.
Exactly.
Yeah. We want to prevent the kids from wandering off alone.
Yeah, exactly. It's about do not wander alone. Do not wander far away. Stay close to your family. That's mainly what most of these stories boil down to. There's a lot of lessons.
Yeah.
And again, the whole story of like Count Dracula's. Yeah, don't go, you know, don't go near creepy buildings that you shouldn't go near.
Yeah,
because there might be a guy in there.
Old men.
Exactly. For the wolf one, yeah, don't go out in the middle of the night on a full moon because maybe you're gonna get eaten.
And then the things that hurt Dracula. We mentioned silver tends to be within that area.
Yeah.
Notoriously in our public mind, we have the story of Professor Abraham Van Helsing, who goes around and, you know, he's the expert on how to beat Dracula. Even though there's one Dracula, I don't know how he became an expert. But he uses things like wooden stakes. I don't know where wooden stake comes from.
I don't either, to be honest. That's something. I don't know if it's like a... You know, hey, you used to stake people to death with giant poles. Here's a little one that goes through your heart.
That's an interesting idea.
That might be where it comes from.
Holy water seems very easy to explain.
Yeah, that's just...
In the sense that he is kind of like a satanic entity.
Yeah, he's like a demon, essentially, or a devil on earth, essentially, is what he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the holy water makes sense. Be gone, devil, right? The silver, though, I personally, I'm not sure exactly where that comes from.
I think it's almost like an alchemical kind of feature into it. Because within, you know, North America, it's, you know, we might just see it as like a holy element. It's silver, it's shiny, you know?
Yeah.
It's not gold, which we need for our money. So, you know, it's not that
useful for something else.
Yeah. But in terms of silver in the European sense, the practice of alchemy did start like...
I think it was 13 something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, alchemy would have started like 6,000 BC.
I'm talking like the more like there's a huge period during the earlier post 1000 AD where it was alchemy was a craze. Like people were trying to figure out how to make gold from mud.
It was coming back.
Yeah,
I think you know, because occultism and the practices of alchemy, astrology, and theurgy and stuff like that, they see periods of vanishing and then resurgence.
Yeah.
Famously, like in the 1920s, there was a massive resurgence of fascination with the occult. That's when fortune tellers started to come back into circuses. That's when little occult societies would start up, notably by characters such as like Aleister Crowley's kind of cults and stuff like that. And there were even elements of that bled into like the Nazi Party, the Third Reich.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of occult study in there to try and...
Which is very interesting.
It's a strange thing. That's a whole other rabbit hole.
It's worth its own podcast.
Yeah.
Something else that's worth its own podcast that maybe we can just touch on a little bit. Aliens.
Oh, God. Aliens.
That alien is its sightings own and stories around Area 51 and Area S4. Especially if anybody's like... Because Bob Lazar, a few years ago, became popular again.
Mm-hmm.
With a documentary on him by Jeremy Corbell. And then lots of other UFO stories, and now in particular with UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, showing up in our news all the time now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now people are waiting, is the U.S. government going to declassify some stuff we all want to hear about?
I mean, they declassified a lot of stuff about just unexplained and unknown, and they don't know what it is according to their documents. You can take that with a grain of salt, but at the same time, maybe they don't actually know what it is. And some of the sightings as well, some of the recorded sightings as well.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's different, actually,
very
from
unique
cryptids.
Yeah.
From traditional cryptids. But the thing that's different from like the folklore cryptids, aliens, while not exclusively something from this century or even the previous century for like, you know, a concept, aliens, when it comes to our understanding of the universe, is something so widely debated between the whole, like, you know, are we alone? But the thing that's crazy is that we do have videos of UAPs.
Well, what's distinguishing them now is that it used to be that we just had stories of these random people in the country who would claim that they were abducted or whatever.
Yeah.
And then now we have military videos and recordings of them, like the one by Commander David Fravor, who is in the U.S. Air Force, and they caught very good video footage of this UFO basically doing circles around them. And it was much faster, and there's stories about like these UFOs showing up and somehow disabling nuclear capabilities going away.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interest in this because now it's crossing over from the realm of woo-woo cryptid
Yeah, into more of a, oh, this actually might be real.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like,
where are my tax dollars going?
Yeah. I don't actually, I'll touch on this a little bit. I don't know if aliens are real. I don't. I like to think we aren't alone in the universe. I don't know if they would show up and start doing these things. But at the same time, when you start seeing video things of things that we can't explain, it's different. It's not just some guy in the middle of nowhere or in the middle of, like, you know, Albuquerque, New Mexico, who's like, I saw a UFO and I got abducted last night. It's like, no, there's like actual video footage of these things.
And, it very quickly showed us that the truth of all these cryptid things is that you still have to get up and go to work in the morning. It doesn't matter if Bigfoot is real or not. I still have a job to do. Just like, it doesn't matter if the aliens exist or not. I still have to go to work.
And same thing with Wendigos.
Yeah.
It's like, or Mothman or any of it. It's like, you guys, you're still going to have to go to work.
The existence of the paranormal does not erase the existence of the normal.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Everyone's like, oh man, if something came out, this would change everything. No. It'd be
really
a note in the news, and it would be there for, like, I don't know, if Bigfoot was proven to be real, it would be big for about, I give him probably 6 months, and then after that, we're like, oh yeah, Bigfoot's
people
real.
Are going to be like, who are you going to vote for? It's Donald Trump?
Exactly.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, and when it comes to aliens, though, that one is a little different from the rest of the cryptids, because aliens is a whole other concept.
It has a note to it that is existentially challenging.
It has a note of the existential challenge. It also has a note of integration.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like, oh, you know, if you're off in the Rockies, be careful, you might encounter, like, a dangerous creature. It's, hey, there's other things out there that are more advanced or just as advanced as us, and they are here.
Mothman,
and they're here now.
Bigfoot, limited military application. UFOs, lots of very big military applications, by contrast.
Yeah, especially when it comes to, like, I don't know if you heard about this, but there's apparently a proposed defense plan for an invasion in the U.S. And essentially what it is hurling giant discs in space at ships.
Well, that sounds like it's going to go great. I'm sure Boeing is really excited to work on this and take a lot of taxpayer money to do so.
Yeah, essentially the idea is you put a nuclear device underneath this silo with a disc on top.
Yeah.
And you detonate it and you fire this disc at the ship. And it's apparently, it's like, oh, well, it's kind of like, you know, a rail gun.
Maybe spend a little bit more time on the drawing board with this one, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, nuclear processes happen in, like, you know, our planet all the time. That's not anything new. But the idea of, you know, above the crust, detonating a bunch of nukes.
Here is, you know, if I am a defense contractor and I would like a big old military contract, I would tell the government, hey, there's this big old threat that you don't know how to deal with. Give us billions of dollars to build discs. Who cares if the aliens are actually real or not? The money in my bank account is real.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of like we were just saying, it doesn't matter if a cryptid's real or not, you still got to go to work in the morning. And if your job happens to deal with a cryptid, then the better the marketing the cryptid can survive.
You know, I actually didn't think about it. If a cryptid actually was discovered as a real thing, by the way, it's no longer a cryptid.
Yeah.
Because the definition changes.
Yes.
It is now a thing. It is now a creature. And it is now somewhere in the animal kingdom.
Well, it's like, even if vampires were discovered to exist, you can bet there's going to be a whole branch of government bureaucracy. There's going to be a new type of insurance that you get to buy.
You can, like, also guess that a lot of teenagers who are really into this stuff are probably going to go visit it.
I was a vampire in college for a little while.
Yeah. And they're going to go and they're going to want to experience it because there are people like that out there.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with, like, you know, there's definitely people that probably want to take a picture with Mothman.
Yep. I would want to take a picture with Mothman. Why not? Doesn't seem that dangerous.
You know, I'd agree, but moths freak me out as they are right now, let alone a giant one.
A giant one would be a little terrifying.
Yeah. If a viewer at home is laughing at me right now, it's understandable. But giant moths, when they like fly in my house, genuinely, I'm like, oh God, I have to deal with this.
Yeah.
It's and a little... it's annoying.
I think the same thing about bats. If a bat, whenever I've encountered a bat, I'm like, oh, this is unpleasant to have a rodent with wings.
Yeah, fly into my house.
Yeah.
Or my cat catch it and give it to me as a gift.
Oh, God.
It happened to my wife.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
Are there any cryptids that we didn't mention that you'd be interested in talking about? You told me your favorite cryptid was a screaming head.
Oh, it wasn't like... It's not my favorite cryptid. It's just not really well known. The floating heads one is an interesting New York cryptid. One of the tribes there, essentially, the story... I'll touch on it briefly. The story goes... There's a tribe that lived along one of the rivers, and they killed their elders and beheaded them, and threw their heads in the lakes, or in the river. And those elders, because they didn't have the proper death rites and whatever, and, you know, ceremony performed and whatnot, their spirits lingered, and only their heads did. And so they will appear when someone's, you know, near the lakes and rivers and chase them and try to kill them.
That's pretty terrifying.
Yeah,
a
floating head.
Oh, this actually reminds me. What's the New Jersey Devil?
So the New Jersey... Well, it's just the Jersey Devil. It's
just the Jersey. I thought it was related to New Jersey.
No, it's the Jersey Devil. It's also known as the Leeds Devil. So the Leeds Devil is from... It's from, like, I think it's 1814 is where the original story happens. There's this woman, Mrs. Leeds. I forget her first name. But she's about to have her 13th child.
13?
Yes.
And that's an unlucky number.
She doesn't want her 13th child.
Yeah.
So she curses the baby in the womb.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. And the baby's born. It's a normal-looking baby. But over time, slowly it starts to change into what the description of the Jersey Devil is. Which is, it's a whole horrifying-sounding thing. It looks like a foal. So if you don't know what a foal is, it's like a baby horse, kind of.
Oh, my goodness.
With wings. And it's it's like its little hooves and legs. And that's what I mean. It's very skinny. It stands upright. It doesn't look right. And apparently in the legend, it killed someone in the house and then flew out of the house once it was... And now it stalks the woods around the area.
If we... I do want to dial back and be like, 13 is an unlucky number for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
It's famously not a... like, people don't put it in buildings. They just skip the 13th floor and go 12th to 14th.
I like the number, personally.
Superstitious. One of the reasons why the superstition exists is they go... At the Last Supper, there were 13 people around that table.
Oh.
And then Christ... did not survive to the end of the year. So they always say that whenever 13 people sit around a table, one of them is not going to survive to the end of the year.
Well, we're screwed. We just had Friendsgiving and there was 13 of us.
Well, good thing we weren't all sitting at the same table. That's safeguard for it.
There you go.
Yeah. This is why a kid's table is very important at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, keep them over there. Let's keep them safe.
Even numbers only, people.
There's no oddballs here.
But so the Jersey Devil... Leeds Devil gets sighted flying around occasionally, or does it ever kill anybody?
No, it doesn't kill anyone. The legend says that it killed one person, and then it stalks an area and chases people, but never kills anyone.
Is there any interesting media about this?
There were a bunch of sightings back in, like, the 80s and whatnot, and the early 1920s, where they were claiming... There was actually a reward at one point for the Jersey Devil.
Oh, fascinating.
The height of it was $15,000 back then.
Wow.
Huge. And that was put up by the county. So to think about that, this mythical creature, was so readily believed, and the town blamed a lot of stuff, like a lot of misfortunes on it, that they put a reward on anyone to catch it.
This is an interesting idea that you can blame things on a cryptid, because that's almost like a new dimension to like their market value.
Oh yeah, it's like Mothman got blamed for the bridge.
Yeah, nobody ever said a thing about the engineers.
No, they're really good patsies if enough people believe it.
That's, well, actually, one of my favorite cryptids is gnomes.
Oh, gnomes, okay,
because
yeah.
we love to blame missing things on gnomes.
Yeah,
all
underpants.
The time. You
gnomes.
Can't find your car keys? It's the gnomes, man.
Yep.
The gnomes. Yep. Just the little guys.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, man. Gnomes and elves.
Yeah.
And I mean the real mythical elves, not the things that you see in Lord of the Rings.
What are real mythical elves?
So Iceland, actually, there's a good percent of the population that believe in elves. And elves are like these tiny little guys that are a little like, you know, mischievous spirits that if you're nice to, they'll be nice to you and like will leave little things for you. But if you're bad, then they'll start taking stuff from you and messing with you.
It's interesting. People document on dimethyltryptamine whenever they consume DMT. They have visions of the clockwork elves, which are these multi-dimensional spiritual entities that are like extremely wise, and they communicate using music or something. And you somehow understand them when you're undergoing that hallucinogenic state. And people kind of like use them to reference, you know, kind of like, oh, maybe this was a little bit like that, the things that seem to exist in Norse myth. Because we do know that a lot of the origin cultures of Norse myth were like, often consume these psychedelic.
Yeah, a lot of magic mushrooms.
Magic mushrooms were like a big part of
it. There's a lot of different mushrooms that were consumed.
Yeah.
For various things in Norse culture.
For better and worse. Like we were talking about before, it's like the hallucinogenic aspect plays a big role into the encounter of cryptids.
Oh yeah,
and time. Mythical entities that kind of fall along that way. So, you know, Icelandic people getting a little bit into the mushrooms and then coming across, oh man, I just ran into one of these little guys out there.
It's definitely an elf.
Definitely an elf.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of like really cool little cryptids from Europe. Elves are definitely one of them. Fairies are another one, but they're like nefarious creatures. Fairies, they're not like if you walk down the street and you find a mushroom ring, a lot of times they're called fairy rings.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of cryptids that appear at sea. Sirens, water nymphs.
Mermaids are another one.
Mermaids.
Usually that's because someone's like, and again, a lot of these happen because people are starving on vessels while they're traveling and they start to hallucinate.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of, like, they believe early...
I swear I just saw the most beautiful woman in the water.
It's a manatee.
Yeah. So it's kind of sad.
It's kind of sad. It's just a big old sea cow.
Yeah.
And then, like, there's the Kraken. Now, that one is kind of rooted in, like, a real creature.
A big old octopus.
Giant squid. Yeah. I mean, it's... They believe it's actually more... Because there's two different types of... large squid, there's giant squid, and there's colossal squid, and there is a very big defining difference.
How big are we talking?
Oh god, like the actual meters? So the difference between a giant squid and a colossal squid, the body of a giant squid is not as long as its tentacles, but a colossal squid, its body is almost longer than its tentacles.
Oh, interesting. Yes.
So the giant squid is anywhere from 30 to 43 feet from tip.
Whoa!
So... And to put a perspective for a lot of people out there, the length of a great white shark, the largest great white shark, is about 34 feet long. So these things are bigger in length, at least, than that creature. For people who use meters out there, it's 9 to 13 meters. It's a huge, huge creature.
Yeah, one of these things starts putting its tentacles up from below the water and wrapping them around your ship. And
surprisingly... They're only about 600 pounds, which is not very heavy for a marine animal of that size. That's actually pretty light. To put another perspective, another really technically another type of cryptid for the water is a megalodon. A lot of people believe it's still out there.
The prehistoric shark
that
was gigantic.
Massive. Fun fact, the photos that people have from like way back when they first reconstructed the actual jaw of it, not actually accurate for the size. So it shows like a 6 foot tall man being well within its jaw. It actually doesn't open that wide. Its jaw is, well, it is 50 feet long on average. Its jaws probably could swallow a whole, like, someone who's like maybe five, eight. Right now, the theory was like it's 7 feet, its widest points for its maximal opening. And now it's like, it's probably closer to five.
Either way, you don't want to get bit.
No, you're dead. Those things are huge. I've actually had the privilege to not only hold but observe a megalodon, fossil for its teeth under a microscope and everything, and to see where, you know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you can see the damages that happen from both erosion from being in the sea and then also from actual, like, oh, this bit into something.
Oh.
It's really neat to see that, to see the differences. Yeah. There's definitely more fossils of its teeth out there than anything else when it comes to its, you know, because there's not much of a skeleton with a shark. It's mainly cartilage. It's also the same reason why you're not going to find a whole lot of remains of, like, ancient giant squid and whatnot, because it's mainly cartilage. Only thing that really remains are these little tiny, like, barbs. Well, they're not even tiny. For the giant squid, it's bigger.
Yeah.
There we go. The average size of a colossal squid is about 30 to 33 feet, so it's about 9 to 10 meters. But they weigh 1,500 pounds. So it's a lot wider. And the only reason that we know that it's a real thing, because we actually haven't observed it, is because sperm whales actually come up with battle scars from
fighting with these...
At the depths that they go to dive to hunt them. It's the only reason that we know is because they have the scars.
It brings very easily to mind that Lovecraft's fear of things at the bottom... Well, he was afraid of all things unknown. Mm. And things at the far reaches of space and things at the depths of the ocean are quite equally unknown to us. We haven't explored as much of the ocean nearly as we presume sometimes.
The actual amount of the ocean that we have explored to date, not even in Love, and especially not in Lovecraft's time, is about 5%.
Yeah. There's a lot down there.
There's a lot we don't know about. And every single time there's a new, research vessel that's sent out to find things, they find something there.
Yep.
They found giant worms that live near volcanic vents. They found a whole lot of different species in the abyss region. When you send down unmanned rovers to, you know, search the bottom, and you get to, like, you know, see the, it's called the abyss snow or something like that.
There's no telling if we might someday stumble across the ancient city of Rillier and find the slumbering form of Great Cthulhu.
You never know, we might. I mean, they did find, and that's the thing, they find ancient ruins at the bottom of, like, seas all the time, including oceans. Just outside of Japan, actually, there is a pyramidal structure that they found in the water that is a really interesting thing, because nobody has any idea what culture this is actually from.
Atlantean. I was just talking about the Anunnaki, bro.
That's down there. It's a really crazy thing to find, though, because the scans so far from it show that it is hollow.
Speaking of Japan, I actually kind of avoided this because I know that Japanese ghost legends are enough to fill up like an entire podcast series, let alone one episode.
We'll probably leave that one alone.
Yeah, from everything between the yokai, for instance.
Yokai to Oni to...
The million and one different kinds of spirits.
There's a lot of spirits. Tales.
It's fascinating, really.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about for...
I think the only thing I would like to leave with listeners at home to think about is when you think about a cryptid tonight and, you know, dressing up as maybe one for yourself for Halloween, is think about where the lore is, and if you have a chance, maybe you just read on it a little bit. Maybe you can find that, you know, your costume isn't exactly accurate, but you can do a really easy thing with makeup to make it look more accurate.
Yeah, you can always go an extra step. People love that in Halloween.
And, you know, it's really fun to learn about these things. And the more that you know about cryptids, I think the more fun you get from being able to tell these stories, especially around the campfire.
regardless of whether or not these things do exist, we gotta get up in the morning. And you have to subscribe. We are at The Forest Creek on your favorite social media platforms, usually Instagram. That's our favorite. We are at youtube.com/@TheRealForestCreek. We're at a new URL, theforestcreek.ca. And you can always reach out to us, theforestcreek@gmail.com, for all your media needs. Subscribe on Spotify. That's our favorite platform for podcasts, but we're in other places too. Apple Podcasts coming soon. As soon as I can figure that out. But until next time, thank you for listening in.
We'll see you next time.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.